This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Up, up and away, everything seems to be working in Boeing's favor, sending shares of the world's biggest plane maker higher than they've ever been before.
Thumbs up, Facebook's profit jumps a staggering 71%, but the company and analysts worry that one key part of its business could hit a ceiling.
Battle of the sexes. Who are the better investors, men or women? A new study has the answer. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Wednesday, July 26th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Okay, I confess this is getting a little repetitive. It was another, yes, another record-setting day for NASDAQ and for the S&P 500. I don't know how many times that has happened in the past month. But today, something new happened. The Dow Jones Industrials set an all-time high, too. Sue will tell you in just a minute about the specific stock that drove today's record run. But broadly speaking, investors were cheered by two things: BOFO earnings reports and the Federal Reserve's decision to keep interest rates unchanged, something we'll talk more about later in the program. But for now, let's show you the happy numbers that made you a little richer today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average advanced 97 points to that record 21,711. And NASDAQ added 10. The S&P 500 eked out a small gain, but it was enough for a new high.
And the stock that fueled the Dow's gains was Boeing. Shares of the Dow component flew higher, recording its largest percentage gain since 2008. The dollar gain of $20 a share was the best daily point rise on record. And the reason? Strong quarterly results, or as one analyst called it, a, quote, close-to-perfect report. Its profit beat expectations, and the company lifted its forecast for the year. Sales fell, but investors didn't care. Boeing churned out a lot of cash from its 787 Dreamliner jet program and returned billions back to shareholders. Investors cheered, sending the stock to a record. Boeing today surpassed Goldman Sachs to be the priciest stock in the Dow. The world's largest aerospace company is the best-performing Dow stock this year, up nearly 50%. Phil LeBeau has more on what's working for Boeing.
Pardon the pun, but Boeing is soaring to new heights, thanks largely to its commercial airplane business lifting profits through greater productivity and efficiency. How much greater? Last quarter, Boeing's operating cash flow was almost double what Wall Street was expecting. And CEO Dennis Muilenburg says the company's cash flow is not slowing down.
We still expect year-over-year cash growth throughout the end of the decade.
Boeing's booming bottom line comes as the company continues to cut jobs, many of them on its assembly lines, which have become more productive thanks in part to increased automation and a relentless focus on improving efficiency.
The company clearly has surprised myself and a lot of people on their ability to take cost out and drive more efficiency through the factory.
The factory that builds Boeing's new 737 MAX will soon be running at its highest level ever, cranking out almost 50 of the new planes every month. But with its longtime rival Airbus aggressively pricing planes and newcomers like Comac in China expected to do the same, Boeing's long-term profitability still faces plenty of challenges. But the good news for Boeing is so many airlines have placed orders for new planes that the backlog now totals almost $500 billion. Meanwhile, Boeing finds itself in a profitable position, driving down costs while increasing production with every new plane that it builds. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
The fellow Dow component, Coke, reported better than expected profit and revenue and issued an upbeat earnings forecast for the full year. But it wasn't because of strong sales of its namesake beverage, but rather because of strong demand for juices and low-sugar sodas. This was the first report under new CEO James Quincy, and he made a big move. He announced plans to make over Coke Zero in the U.S. Shares rose about 1% on the day.
Facebook crushed its profit and revenue estimates. A push into video ads helped bolster its mobile ad business. In its earnings report late today, the social media company said about 2 billion people were using its service monthly, up 17% from a year earlier. Facebook blew past its earnings estimates, earning $1.32 a share compared to the estimate of $1.13. Revenue soared 45% from a year earlier to more than $9 billion. The stock dipped and then rose in after-hours trading. Julia Boorstin has more on Facebook's quarter.
Facebook continues its tear, outperforming expectations across the board, with both revenue and monthly active user growth outpacing estimates. Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg telling me that the company is benefiting from businesses looking to build their mobile presence, not just on Facebook, but also on Instagram.
People are using our products and services to share and connect and build community on their mobile phones. We're also really excited to announce today that we now have over 15 million businesses using business profiles on Instagram, and that joins our 70 million business pages on Facebook. So these are both Facebook and Instagram are places where people are connecting with each other, but businesses are connecting with their consumer.
Sandberg wouldn't break out Instagram's revenue, but she said that they're very pleased with its success. As for concerns that Facebook won't be able to rely on upping its ad load to drive revenue growth, Sandberg says they just want higher quality ads to be a win-win for users and brands. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
One of the world's largest electronics manufacturers will build a new $10 billion factory in Wisconsin, which means jobs, potentially a lot of them. Foxconn, a major Apple supplier based in Taiwan, will make flat-screen displays used in TVs and other products. The announcement was made this evening at a ceremony at the White House and marks the first major U.S. investment for Foxconn. The decision to build a new plant in the U.S. is considered a big win for the president in his push to create U.S. manufacturing jobs. Scott Cohn is reporting the story for us tonight, fresh off his reporting on Best States for Business. Why Wisconsin and where roughly in Wisconsin?
Well, we think it's going to be the southeast part of the state, which happens to be in House Speaker Paul Ryan's district, not far from the home of White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, but that's not why. This is a very heavily traveled, very busy, booming corridor between Chicago and Milwaukee on Interstate 94. And Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker just said at this announcement that they're calling it Wisconsin Valley, Wisconsin and Foxconn, with the idea that this is going to be now a site for advanced manufacturing. That's what they're hoping. Wisconsin does do well in our studies for things like technology and innovation and education, not so well for workforce, and they're going to need a lot of workers for this, partly because unemployment in the state is so low, just about 3%. So they'll draw workers from around the area. One local official told me if you build it, they will come. A lot of them may come from Illinois, may commute from Illinois because it's just a hop, skip, and a jump.
Yesterday, the president told the Wall Street Journal that he had talked to Apple's CEO, Tim Cook, and that Mr. Cook had promised to build a number of manufacturing facilities in the U.S., which is leading people to speculate that perhaps today's announcement was what the president was referring to. But do we know that?
No, it is not what he was referring to. First of all, while Foxconn is a big supplier to Apple, and it's where Apple assembles the iPhone, basically, this is LCD displays used for, as we said, flat panel TVs and other things. And Apple is not saying anything about its plans, not confirming what the president talked about in his interview with the Wall Street Journal. By all indications, this is something completely different. It is Foxconn. Apple is not involved.
What incentives? These things usually come with some sort of incentives. What sort of incentives did the state of Wisconsin or the federal government, what did they provide to Foxconn? And why would Wisconsin pay to bring a factory in a state which, as you point out, has extremely low unemployment to begin with?
Well, right. They don't exactly need the jobs, but they need these kinds of jobs. This is what's prized. This is advanced manufacturing. The numbers being talked about are in the billions of dollars, and already some of the watchdog groups that follow this are calling that somewhat troubling. Presumably, the state legislature is going to have to work through some of this. We understand there's going to be state money, federal money, and local money, but we also understand that there are no new federal incentive programs that are going to be drawing on existing programs. Still a lot to sort out, a lot of money, but the thinking is these are valuable jobs and it's an important investment.
Sort of next generation investment.
Right.
Scott
Cohn,
good to have you in the house.
Sure. It sure is.
Yeah.
Meantime, Amazon is going on a hiring spree. The online retailer is looking to fill more than 50,000 positions across the country. The majority of jobs will be full-time, though some part-time jobs will also be available at sorting centers. In January, Amazon said it wanted to hire 100,000 full-time workers over the next year and a half. Amazon will host what it calls the nation's largest job fair next week at 10 of its warehouses.
And still ahead, who are better investors, women or men?
New security measures are landing at the nation's airports. The Transportation Security Administration instituted new rules for screening large electronic devices. Travelers in standard security lanes will now be required to place all electronics larger than a cell phone in bins for X-ray screening at all airports. There are no changes, however, to what people can bring through those lanes.
Also in Washington, the Senate today rejected a Republican effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act with a two-year delay. Late yesterday, a separate measure that would have repealed major parts of the law came up short as well. And this morning, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell urged lawmakers to get it done.
This certainly won't be easy. Hardly anything in this process has been. But we know that moving beyond the phase of Obamacare is the right thing to do. We've put a lot of hard work already into this. We've had important successes like we saw with the vote to proceed yesterday. We have to keep up the work now so we can get this done.
Republicans may now weigh a measure to repeal only part of Obamacare. That's the so-called skinny repeal that would leave most of the Affordable Care Act in place for now.
Sales of newly built homes increased in June, even as the ongoing inventory shortage continued to eat into overall activity. The Commerce Department said that new home sales edged up 0.8% from the previous month. The biggest gains were found in the West and the Midwest, which both saw double-digit increases. Builders are struggling to keep up with demand because of rising lumber costs and a shortage of both labor and land.
Housing is, of course, one part of the economy the Fed tracks very closely. And today, the central bank policymakers unanimously decided not to raise interest rates. But the Fed did lay the groundwork for another potentially big move, and investors are paying attention. Steve Leisman explains.
The Federal Reserve kept interest rates unchanged at its July meeting, maintaining the range of 1 to 1.25%. But it signaled that it will likely begin reducing its $4.5 trillion balance sheet as soon as its next meeting in September. The Fed said that its previously announced plan to gradually sell securities, unwinding its massive stimulus program from the financial crisis, will begin, quote, relatively soon, and that maintaining the current level is only, quote, for the time being. The Fed bought securities during and after the crisis to try and drive down interest rates further once it lowered its benchmark rate to near zero and wouldn't go any further into negative territory. The Fed statement was generally positive on the economy, saying job gains have been solid and economic activity has been rising moderately. But it noted that inflation is running below its 2% goal. It had previously said it was running just somewhat below, took out the word somewhat, so that was seen by some observers as a relatively dovish part of the statement. The Fed said it expects to raise rates gradually, but markets doubt the chance of a December rate hike right now, and the Fed backed that doubt up with its concern over inflation. The Fed did say it expects inflation to begin moving back towards that 2% goal, and that could lay the foundation for the next rate hike later this year. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Steve Leisman in Washington.
Ford tops Wall Street expectations. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The automaker reported second quarter earnings that beat analyst estimates due to strong pricing on its F-Series trucks and a solid performance from its credit union. But the company acknowledged that much of its quarterly performance was thanks to a lower corporate tax rate, which will rise slightly. Ford did raise its full-year earnings forecast, but analysts pointed out that tax rate will likely lead to lower net income than previously expected. And on that, shares of Ford fell 2% to $11.06. And Tupperware beat its profit expectations, but sales missed the mark. The home products maker also said it would wind down its cosmetics business after failing to find a buyer. Shares of Tupperware were down 8% to $63.91. Anthem says it could pull out of more Obamacare markets if the government cuts subsidies to the insurers. The health insurance plan provider also reported earnings that beat expectations but missed on revenue. Anthem said it expects enrollment to grow by 300 to 500,000 members in 2017. Anthem fell 3% to $184.99. Hershey's second quarter earnings beat estimates, citing strong sales for Easter candy. The chocolate manufacturer also raised its quarterly dividend 6%. Hershey shares were off more than 1% to $106 even.
Rainy weather on the East Coast and down in Texas hurt attendance at Six Flags, and as a result, the theme park operator posted earnings and revenue that missed estimates. Still, shares rose 6% today to $59.23 as some underlying metrics showed signs of growth. The nation's largest home builder, D.R. Horton, said solid market conditions helped it beat sales and profit forecast. But the company's order growth was the slowest in three quarters. Shares of D.R. fell about 2% to $36.29. Northrop Grumman's quarterly report came in better than expected, the company citing strong performance in all three of its businesses, particularly an increase in sales of its aerospace systems. Northrop, nevertheless, off a fraction at $263.86. After the bell, Gilead Sciences results topped Wall Street estimates, despite a drop in sales of its flagship hepatitis C drugs. The company had warned earlier this year that sales of the high-priced drugs would fall because fewer people were eligible for treatment, as well as more competition from rival drug makers. Gilead shares initially rose following that news.
Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, have become very popular with investors. 15 years ago today, the first bond ETF was offered. So Bob Pisani takes a look now at how far they've come and how far they still may go.
15 years ago, Barclays began offering a new way to invest in bonds through a new division called iShares, which BlackRock now owns. They called it an exchange-traded fund, or an ETF. And even though only four funds were launched that day, it's changed the way bonds are traded. 15 years later, there's nearly 1,000 bond ETFs worldwide. The assets, over $700 billion, and most of it's here in the United States. That's a success by any measure, and the business is only going to get bigger. People have come to understand the merits of index investing and ETFs. You keep more of what you earn, lower fees. Despite complaints that the ETF business has grown too fast, ETFs are a really small part of the U.S. equity and bond business. It's only about 1% of the whole bond market, and it's about 8% of the stock market. Still small. That will be changing. Martin Small, the head of iShares U.S., says that the ETF business could eventually get to 50% of the U.S. stock market, though that will take many years. And the bond business could double in the next 5 years. So despite the attention ETFs have attracted from retail investors, there's an even larger audience that the biggest ETF providers have set their sights on. That's the institutional investors, like professional asset managers. It's a big opportunity for the ETF business. More pros will be putting more money into bond ETFs in the future as the whole bond business moves toward electronic trading. And it's not just because investors are shifting money into ETFs. Change is being forced on the industry by regulation. So new rules coming out in 2018 will require the disclosure of bond markups, which will make those markups, and sometimes 1% or more difficult to justify. People who are charging a 1% commission are going to have to explain why that is a better deal than owning a much lower cost bond ETF. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
And now to a topic that we hope won't lead to the tossing of Kaiser rolls at your dinner table. Why women are better investors than men are. This is what a new Wells Fargo report found when it analyzed more than 900,000 investment accounts between December 2010 and December 2015. Tracy McMillan is co-author of the study and the head of global asset allocation at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Tracy, welcome. Good to have you with us. I really do feel that I should just sit here very quietly and let you and Sue talk about this. Nevertheless, they're letting me lead the segment. So what did the study find? How much better as investors are women than men, and why?
So what we found was an interesting dichotomy between what women say about their investing ability and the actual performance results. What women tend to say is that they have less confidence in their ability as investors. They also say that they expect lower returns on average than men do. And they also tend to look towards
advice.
Look towards the advice, exactly. Yeah, they want more advice from their advisors. And so what we found was that women, on average, outperformed men, and they also took less risk while they were doing that. So
we found
that they took about...
You found three things that basically women do differently than men, and that gives them the edge. Patience, discipline, and the willingness to learn. And they trade less frequently.
That is right. Yes, exactly. And
so what was the difference in return, Tracy? In other words, was it they earn twice as much with X percent less risk? Did they earn just a smidge more? I need to salvage something here for my gender.
It was actually just a little bit more than women an absolute return basis. But when we adjusted for risk, the return was actually a little bit higher.
And the one thing that you found that you mentioned earlier is that women lack confidence. How can they basically...
Yes.
Not fix, but get that confidence back, because they do have a slight edge on performance. They are doing those three things very well. How do you boost the confidence aspect?
Well, that's exactly right. Women are good investors, and I think that that's the message we really want to get out, and we want people to know that. And do a few things. We think that one is you can learn more about investing by watching shows like this and by going to investment internet sites. You can also talk with your advisor about investing to gain more confidence. And the other thing that we would suggest that women do is to know what's available to them. Know what's available through your work,
right?
How you can invest in 401k plans and things like that.
Tracy, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Tracy McMillan with Wells Fargo.
My pleasure.
Investment
Thank you.
Institute. You bet.
Coming up, corporate America faces some big cyber threats, but are they doing enough to prevent them?
Great Britain will ban the sale of new gas and diesel cars by the year 2040. Britain's plan matches a similar pledge made recently by France. It's part of a broader push to curb emissions by promoting electric cars. Volvo recently said it would phase out internal combustion engines in the coming years.
Corporate America has its guard up against hackers because the threat is growing. Today, executives, security experts, and hackers are gathering at the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas, one of the biggest cybersecurity events in the world, and Aditi Roy is there.
This may look like a scene from a movie, but it's real life. The room is the Network Operations Center for the Black Hat Cybersecurity Conference in Las Vegas. And the engineering pros here are trying to ward off would-be hackers, because most of the 15,000 people attending the conference don't feel safe from hackers.
It's not whether you'll be breached or attacked. It's a matter of when.
Many leaders at the conference share that bleak view of the state of information security. One recent study shows the number of U.S. data breaches so far this year is on a record pace, almost 30% higher from this time last year. Another survey found 60% of the top experts here at the conference believe a successful cyber attack on U.S. critical infrastructure will likely occur in the next 2 years. That includes anything from disrupting a power grid to manipulating traffic signals, a dam, or even a nuclear plant. Nearly 3 out of 4 said recent examples of state-sponsored cyber attacks, like allegations of Russian election hacking to North Korea's possible involvement in the WannaCry attack, have eroded their confidence in the security of critical infrastructure. The experts behind the study say part of the reason for that pessimism is that hackers are getting more potent.
Cyber attacks are most definitely increasing, I think, because they're becoming effective. And I don't think that enterprises have the tools necessarily to handle them.
But companies are fighting back, elevating their top IT pros to the executive ranks. Most Fortune 500 firms now have chief information security officers, or CISOs. They report to the CEO, regularly attend board meetings, and translate IT needs into strategic goals.
As we've seen the elevation of some of these attacks and some serious impacts on businesses, there's an understandable desire for the board of directors and the CEO to have somebody who owns the responsibility for security.
But some warn that companies need to go further to protect themselves by doing more checks of their networks and by arming those chief information security officers with large enough teams to battle those digital predators. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Last night, we brought you a story about a Wisconsin company offering to implant its employees with a chip right here in between the thumb and forefinger. We asked you what you thought of the idea, and in our poll, most of you thought it was a bad idea. Just 5% of you said you would let the chip fall where it may.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
We didn't vote, although I think we would have agreed. All right, that's it for us tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Tyler Matheson. Have a great evening, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.